People, this is Bianca Reichert hosting today's episode of Panning the Stream. Alongside me is Daniel Reichert. Daniel.
Alongside. I'm across. Can a cross be alongside? Is it a metaphorical alongside?
I want, when the people are listening to us, I want them to imagine us sitting side by side, holding hands. And
just staring at a wall in front of us?
Well, looking at each other's faces.
Like if we go to an Applebee's, we sit on the same side of the thing, yeah? Holding hands.
I always hate when, like, if we go out with people and I can't sit across from you because you're the main person I want to talk to.
When you're going out with folks, though, you know, we get to talk to each other all the time. We gotta give the other folks our attention.
Yeah, but around you, like, gravity feels right if I look at you, but outside of, like, the well of your vision cone, everything is just pure chaos for me, so.
Chaos.
Yeah, it's
you're on
complete,
a beanbag
like,
with a dog
noise
playing just, Elden Ring.
It's like the Wingdings font is my life, and then I look at you, and it's Times New Roman.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm the Times New Roman of husbands.
That's right.
Excellent.
And great. Because you're so tired...
Am I getting mocked? Are you doing me a favor?
Yeah, that's right. I'm doing you a big old favor by hosting this episode. Does everyone like it?
It's not a Twitch.
Guys,
there's
like
no
it?
Twitch chat. There's, what do you think I'm looking at on this laptop? It's not a live chat.
The year was 1997.
Whoa, we're getting into it. All right.
What do you mean?
I'm just saying. What were you going to say? It was a year that happened,
the
yeah.
The next year was 1998.
It's true.
And then in a few years was 9/11, which was terrible for everyone.
That's the jump, yeah.
And now we're here.
You liking this hosting? By the way, I like how you came up with the idea, like, do you want me to host? And then I was like, oh, sure, yeah, that sounds like fun. And then you just mocked me for being tired. It's like, this was your idea.
Oh, that's okay that you're tired. Well, we are all tired.
I've been in Texas for a week.
You were at a work conference.
I was at a work conference.
You were on your feet.
I was on my feet on concrete floors most of the time. My old man knees hurt. I walked around a lot, but I had a good old time. I got to see a lot of folks and talk to a lot of folks that I like talking to.
Eat a lot of smackadillas.
Ate mini smackadillas. I ate some cheese logs. I found a place called, what's the concept of a cheese log? Funny.
Yeah, I just don't even know. They're is it
so
like
good.
A mozzarella stick?
Yeah, but it was like fat, so they had to call it a log. It wasn't a stick, it was a log.
Do you eat it with like a knife and fork or with your
You
hands?
Probably could, but I just shoved it all in my goddamn fat face. It's like a pickle size of like a mozzarella stick.
Wow.
It was like a pepper
That's
jack
too
thing.
Much. I feel like the ratio of breading to cheese and mozzarella stick is key, and if it's too much cheese. Then...
This was good. I liked it a lot. Although you probably wouldn't like the deep dish, like Chicago, like Giordano's, like pizza type stuff. I do like that. So I like the overstuffed cheese stuff.
Yeah, I know you're a big fan of that. To me, the Chicago pizza, it always just seems more like a bread bowl filled with cheese than a pizza. You know what I mean?
Which is part of why I love that. Mm.
Yes, I love pizza, but I'm partial to a good old fashioned grandma style slice, the thin slice, or
I like thin.
Margarita, if you will.
Is a Sicilian the like square kind of fat
those
one?
Yeah,
I'm not big on those.
I'm not big on those either. I feel like it's too like unless the bread is just like the dough is just unreal.
Yeah,
or the crust or whatever you want to call it. I feel like by and large it's just kind of like wasted calories because it's. Just like you're biting into a pillow of bread.
Yeah, every time we go back to your parents' place and they get pizza from that place, I always tell myself, like, oh, I got to try at least one of these here. And every time I'm like, I should have just stuck with the thin crust. I like that so much better.
Yeah, if you're listening to this, Maria and Tom, please just get the grandma pizza. That's what everyone wants, just the grandma pizza.
Thin, greasy crust, like, hell
everyone
yeah.
Everyone hates Sicilian pizza.
I mean, it's better than no pizza, but when the grandma's is there, you just want the grandma's.
That's true, yeah. We've been in a lot of situations where it was just like, well, this is better than nothing. I distinctly remember in San Francisco, there was that pizza joint on Terraval, like short walk from our apartment. And it was like the only by the slice pizza place in the city, I think. And I remember one time, like I took an edible, so I was just like fucked up out of my mind. And you and Brian went to get pizza, just like a sliced pizza and like a milkshake from this bubble tea place.
Yeah.
And it was like 2 hours. I watched the entirety of this montage of Kurt Cobain documentary, I remember. Yeah, it was just a fucking, just a saga to get a single slice of shitty pillow pizza.
I remember being there with Brian and we were not sober. And I remember we were sitting in the lobby as the family that runs the pizza place. We're all just like screaming at each other and having some giant drag out fight. And like every once in a while we'd be like, are you still making our pizza? And they're just like, yeah, the fight's coming. Just chill out. And it's like, okay. And then go back to like family feud.
What's funny is that pizza is like the quickest thing to make. It takes like 2 minutes in the oven because the oven's so hot. It just cooks like instantly. So it's ludicrous that you'd have to wait for that pie.
It was, I remember being, that place is okay by San Francisco standards, except for it's weird that there's that one amazing pizza place in San Francisco, that Tony's. But
well, it's anywho. Like when you go into a pizza joint, you want a slice of pizza that's cheesy, that's hot and fresh, and in your plate in a matter of minutes, versus a pizza joint that goes at its own pace, that's slow and brooding, much like the film Dan and I are discussing this week. Copland.
That's right. Copland.
You see Stuart Sylvester Copland. Stallone. You see Robert De Niro. You see Janine Garofalo. And you think major action blockbuster.
Yes, Janine Garofalo. That's what I think. Whiz bang action thriller when you see Janine Garofalo on cam.
She was in like every single thing in the 90s and early 2000s.
She was all over the place. Which also, this movie, the cast is the most insane. 90s. Anyone who ever played a cop in the 90s.
Yeah, let me read the cast. Yeah. Harvey Keitel. Ray Liotta, Robert De Niro, Peter Berg, Janine Garofalo, Robert Patrick, the T-1000, Michael Rapaport, Annabelle Sciorra from, I remember her from Sopranos, probably saying her name wrong, and of course, Sly Stallone.
Sly Stallone, you got Womack from The Rock, he's in it, he's one of the bad cops, there's a lot of bad cops in this, Ray Liotta's in this, Ray Liotta's kind of like, I think, middle of the, I think Stallone's the good cop in this movie.
It's kind of middling, you know what I mean? It's not explicitly good. He kind of has a turning point.
I'd say he's the one not aggressively corrupt cop. He's the sheriff of Copland, which is Garrison, New Jersey. Yeah. Uh-huh. He seems to be the one like kind of well-meaning one. Liotta seems a little wild card-y, but maybe not evil.
Reckless, but maybe not as evil. I mean, he did... burn his girlfriend alive to get
That's right. Check, so. That's right. Yeah. Accidentally murdered his girlfriend, but still murdered his girlfriend nonetheless.
Accidental murder.
Yeah. But this cast is insane. I feel like every 2 seconds it was like, him, oh, her, oh, Edie Falco,
And that's right. Edie Falco was in the first scene. She wasn't in anything else. But it's wild how extreme this cast is in terms of talent and like name recognition value, but how understated the script is. Because like it, you think it's an action movie, it's about corrupt cops, it's got this cast, it's going to have some like high octane action sequences, but the reality is it's more of like a noir. It's very, very slow burn, small town New Jersey. It takes place in this made up town of Garrison, which is, it was shot in Edgewater, New Jersey, and I grew up very close to there, so I'm familiar with like Fort Lee and all the towns that are right outside of the George Washington Bridge, and it does a really good job of communicating that like sense of like, I always felt this way about like Hoboken and all the cities in New Jersey that are on the coast where you could see the skyline, the New York City skyline, that there was always just a sense of like, there's just some inherent romanticism in like a place like Hoboken, for example, where it's like you're in this urban environment and then across the river is just this gleaming, shimmering, spectacle that is New York City. And it's just like always looming there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that skyline that you can always, especially like if you've had a place that was like, oh my God, you can look out the window, or if you're at a restaurant or something like, oh, there's the skyline, or you're on the river or something like that. Like that, the idea of that's really cool.
Yeah. And I think the movie does a pretty good job of communicating that even in the opening sequence where it shows you the New York City skyline, and like, naturally when you see that opening of a movie, you assume that that's going to be the location of the film, but then it cuts to Garrison, New Jersey, across the river, and it's very slow pace, just ordinary suburban town. There's like one bar in the place, then it's Cop Bar. So that's why Garrison is called Copland, because that's where all the cops from the 37th precinct in Manhattan go.
Yeah, and it's like a loophole they got where it's like normally you have to live in the precinct that you work at, but they're like, oh, they got termed like auxiliary transit cops or something like that, and they were able to all kind of move there. And it's explained at some point that like Ray Donlan, Harvey Keitel, he basically like created it as this like outer heaven for cops, where it's just like it is just cops. And then we do learn a little bit later on, like, okay, how this came to be and some much shadier things that led into Garrison becoming this. But it was based on James Mangold, the director who did like Ford versus Ferrari, Girl Interrupted, Walk the Line, Logan. He was from Washingtonville, New York, and he based Garrison on that. And it's like in this movie, it's like a small town of like 1,200 people. And I love what they did with Stallone here, because he, to play the sheriff of this, like, he is like, he's kind of just this beaten down, sad sheriff of this little town. And at the time, I mean, Stallone's entire career, he was always jacked action or sportsman, you know, Rocky, Rambo, all that stuff. And then like early 90s, he tried some like comedy stuff that didn't really work out. And then he did this, and I remember this is like deep in my like Entertainment Weekly, like I'm tracking all the box office of every movie that comes out, you know, teenage years. I was 13 years old. And I remember reading about this and being like, holy shit, Stallone's actually doing like a serious movie here. And he put on 40 pounds because like Stallone was always jacked and like fitness fanatic guy. And here he's just like this pudgy, sad cop of this like, I don't know how to describe the town. Like, it's for the cops that are there. They seem all into it because it's just like, hey, it's just us cops and we can kind of do whatever. But it's just like very, very shady origins that went into it.
Yeah. And I guess at its surface, it just looks like an ordinary suburban town, like working class and stuff. And but, you know, once you learn more about it and all the more nefarious aspects of it begin to be revealed, then yes, you do acknowledge it as a copland and not an ordinary suburban town. That's what Robert De Niro calls it at one point. He's from the Internal Affairs Bureau, which I guess investigates police in Manhattan. Like, they investigate their own just to make sure everyone's on the up and up, I guess, and fight corruption and all that shit. I don't know.
Seems like they're not well liked by the bad cops in Garrison. Yeah.
Did you know that this movie is where the term good cop, bad cop comes from?
Is that right?
No.
I didn't think that was right. I feel like I'd certainly heard that before.
But I mean, 97. If you think about it, it's pretty wild that there's a good cop and there's bad cops.
They could have called this good cop, bad cop. They could have. You're completely correct.
Yeah, just something to think about.
I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, we're 19- talking about 97. It. 1997. anyway, Sylvester Stallone, like, yeah, it's really remarkable what a performance he puts on here, because I feel like he does this like kind of naive, schlubby, depressed, like, and it's not explicitly over the top, like he's not crying himself to sleep or like binge drinking. He's just kind of like lonely and like playing pinball at the arcade and like seems kind of oblivious to everything, you know?
A lot of like laying around his shitty place with like liquor bottles everywhere, listening to The River, which is I think Bruce Springsteen's album about divorcing his wife. So it's very just like, it's the most Jersey movie ever. He's just sitting here listening to this like Springsteen divorce album, you know?
Yeah, it's funny how Jersey it is. I mean, not only does it take place, but like a lot of the cast is will recognize from The Sopranos, but yeah, he does a really, really great job here. I mean, they all do. You know, it's kind of like an ensemble cast, so it's not like aside from Stallone's character, it's not like any one character gets like a huge amount of focus. But everyone really chews up all their scenes.
It's kind of spread out, considering like it's not a long movie. It's like 1:40, but I feel like it does try to cram in a lot of characters and a lot of like background on both the characters and like how Stallone went deaf and wanted to be a cop and you know, and then also the city itself. Like, it tries to cram quite a bit into 1:40. It never feels quite rushed though, you know. Like, I do like the background of Stallone's character. They don't spend too much time on it. It's just he always wanted to be an NYPD cop, but then when he was younger, he saw a car going over the bridge, went underwater to try to save the woman, and went deaf in one ear in the process. Woman winds up, you know, staying in the town, marries this asshole cop, Peter Berg. And so that's kind of like Stallone's kind of sad origin, is that like, oh, he always wanted this thing, but because he did this heroic act and he saved her, but he really kind of like shot himself in the foot in terms of his career. And also this, he kind of like fell in love with this woman and is still friends with her, but like he saw her marry this like total asshole and he has to like kind of just see it because it's this tiny town, everyone knows each other, you know?
Yeah, it was sad when he was reflecting on that moment later in the movie when he was talking about how he saved Liz, who's Annabella Chiora. And he was talking about how, you know, like that event pretty much defined his whole life. And ever since then, it's just been like, you know, everything kind of pales in comparison after you save someone's life. And he talks about how, like, if it happened now, he wouldn't even go for it. He would just like be standing there thinking about it before he did anything. And
yeah,
it just shows how like worn down he's just become from not even like just, it doesn't seem like it's like being inundated with adversity. Rather, it's just kind of becoming numb over time, like a numbness to the world. And just, you know, that like if you turn your head one time and you keep turning your head, it's like after you do it one time, it, you just kind of become desensitized to it. And it's just easier to not look behind the curtain rather than look behind the curtain and then unleash Pandora's box. And I feel like he's kind of been walking that line. Like you see it in the opening scene where he's playing pinball and he notices in the corner of his eye, like the two police officers just like carefully or kind of secretly transferring this mysterious duffel bag between them. Mm-hmm. And you could tell like he thinks that he's suspicious of something, but I think like the bigger part of his brain is just kind of turning that off because he just wants to not engage with anything.
Just easier for as he sees it himself and all the cops. And it's just like, this is just how this place works.
Yeah. You know? And like his whole attitude, I feel like, is also a reflection of the movie itself. Like, because it isn't a movie that's just like aggressively trying to put all the stuff in front of you. It doesn't actually show any of the corrupt activity. It does like have an earlier scene with Michael Rapaport's character where he gets sideswiped by a car and then he thinks the two drivers who are these two black teens have a gun. And so he shoots them and the teens die and then he fakes the suicide.
I didn't even catch that. Like they didn't actually shoot the tire out. Like, because they show the tire bursting and they show the guys.
I was
like,
confused about that as well. But then when they said they don't have a gun and the guy just had the one boy just had a one of those tire things, the anti-theft, what are they called?
Yeah, it was one of the claws or whatever they're called. Yeah, it's something that he was holding out the window. But yeah, it all happens very fast, mm-hmm. and they make it seem like they shoot the tire, but no, he just drove over some glass, and that's where it's like Keitel and those guys show up, the corrupt ones, and they basically, in the middle of an argument, stage this like, hey, fucking act like you jump, you know, I'll get you out of here, get you to like basically a witness protection type thing, you know?
Yeah, in retrospect, I wonder if the T-1000's character was in on that as well, because at that point is when he planted the gun in the teen boy's car.
Yes, he plants an Uzi.
Yeah. And the ambulance, is it the EMT or whoever?
The EMT sees it and is like, hey man, what the fuck? Like,
yeah, so that causes a kerfuffle, and I wonder if that's the time where they kind of had Michael Rapaport and hide himself or whatever.
My assumption was this was the George Washington Bridge, so I assumed Rapaport was jumping off to get onto the tanker to find Metal Gear Ray and get the photos for philanthropy, but
that's
I think that's probably what's going on there. Yeah. But no, we find out, like, do we learn right away that he didn't actually jump? Like, it's pretty quick, right, that we see him alive?
Yeah, it's shortly after Harvey Keitel and I think it's Ray Liotta in the car with him, or no, it's the T-1000 in the car with him, and they get pulled over by Jeanine Garofalo and Michael Rapaport sticks his head up while they're driving away.
I love that he's just the T-1000. Like, Robert Patrick's his name, he's a great actor, but like, you talk about a guy who's forever going to be defined by this role.
Well, especially this era, Robert Patrick,
because he looks like the T-1000. Yeah, it's like 6 years later.
Exactly, he looks exactly the same. Whereas I see him now, he's an older man, like in Peacemaker and stuff. He's fantastic in Peacemaker, and I also saw him in this really shitty movie, Identity Theft, which wasn't great, but he was great. He always kind of plays that gruff character.
Cold eyes. You know, which, you know, that's the thing about Stallone, too, is Stallone, despite being, you know, big action hero all the time, he's got kind of a sad face and eyes. And so it actually lends itself well to this role, I think. You know,
he has a really expressive face.
He does. And he really just, I don't know, I really believed him in this role, you know, despite having seen him in a million other things where he's not this role at all, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hi, I'm going to whisper some things to you now about Crunch chocolate bars. Because apparently this whispering thing is a thing that makes you feel things. It's saying something crunchy is coming in the candy wrapper language. Imagine your tongue hiking up those crispy, rocky ridges. Now, drum roll please.
Wow, that's good. Crunchy, munchy chocolate doesn't whisper.
Turn up the fun with Crunch.
This episode is brought to you by Beyond Natural Pet Food. Beyond Pet Food helps me care for what matters, my pets and my world. They help me nourish my pets with high-quality natural ingredients, like wild-caught salmon and organic free-range chicken. Beyond also has responsible sourcing practices and a long-term partnership with the Nature Conservancy. Beyond Pet Food, your pet, your world. Learn more at beyondpetfood.com.
But there's that scene where the cops are all having this like big party and Stallone shows up and he's just like, hey, what the fuck? dude, this doesn't look good.
It was like 2 days after a cop funeral.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they're all having this party and Stallone's like, man, come on. You're basically making his life hard. It's like, how do I look the other way from here? This is very egregious, you know? And then there's that note that Harvey Keitel's wife passes along to Rappaport, and it's like, hey, they're going to kill you. And they do try to kill him, and it doesn't work out. They try to drown him in like an outdoor above ground pool thing.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, do they end up catching him at all, or does he run away?
He gets away. They blow it because, like, those gunshots happen. Because, like, I think Rappaport pulls out his gun and starts shooting. Yeah. And then, like, other cops, like, it's just like people are starting to notice, and he just kind of runs off, basically. Mm. And it's around this point, I think, that the mayor, like, the New York City mayor, suspends the investigation. And it's just like, hey, we're not going to look anymore. It's insinuated that, like, Keitel kind of, like, used his connections and stuff to, like, hey, shut the shit down, you know?
Yeah. And Robert De Niro, as the IA guy, is, like, obviously extremely frustrated. And I later learned in reading about this movie that scene in which he was eating his sandwich and Sylvester Stallone came to be like, hey, I actually do want to help you guys out. Mm-hmm. And they were, you know, the two IA guys were eating their sandwiches. They were actually, like, genuinely eating sandwiches from craft service. And it was just, like, an improvised addition to the scene.
Oh, that's cool.
They would include the sandwiches.
Oh, I like that. It felt pretty real, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was great. Yeah, I mean, Robert De Niro's character, like, in any movie he's in, it's impossible to not be thinking about him all the time because he just has such command over everything. And I feel like if there was one, like, purely, well, it's hard to even say purely good guy, but person who has, you know,
good intentions.
Good intentions, the opposite intentions of the evildoers in this movie. I guess it would be embodied in him.
Well, at a certain point, I thought that he was actually maybe not good when Stallone comes to him and is like, hey, man, I really want to, like, find this kid and everything. And there's a period where De Niro is like, hey, man, that was a couple weeks ago. I don't give a fuck. Like, hey, I'm gonna give you a chance to be a good cop and you blew it. And, you know, like, basically, I thought that, like, oh, wait, he doesn't give a fuck about this. That was a couple years ago or a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But he specifically turns to, like, the other cop with him and says, like, hey, now if he goes back there and makes a mess, then we got a case again. Mm-hmm. And so I love the fact that he was, like, basically trying to be a dick and being like, oh, who cares? Just to get Stallone to do it.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, okay, well, I can't open this case back up, but if he causes some shit, and he does, I like that part a lot.
Yeah, that was cool. And then on his way out, Sylvester Stallone sees, like, all these discarded files about the case, and he steals some and learns about how there was this other police officer who was going to testify against Harvey Keitel, and then
Tunney.
Harvey and his roving gang of evil policemen had him, like, stabbed to death.
Yeah, he was arrested for, like, an illegal chokehold thing, and they found him dead in his cell. That, like, you know, was arranged, obviously, by Keitel and them.
Yeah, and this is kind of, like, this aspect of the movie, I feel like, kind of is a perfect distillation of the problems I have with this movie, which is that so much of it happens outside of the view of the viewer. So you're being told a lot of stuff, you're reading a lot of stuff, and you're making these connections along with the characters, but you're not actually seeing it happen.
I see what you mean. They occasionally will show you, like, Method Man is in this, and he's just some random guy attacking that shitty Officer Mangold on a roof. And so we actually do get to see that part play off, because he basically, like, throws him over the roof, he's hanging off this, like, satellite thing or whatever, and we get to see Harvey Keitel be like, oh, well, if I don't save him right now, he'll probably die. And he's, you know, cheating on, you know, he's with my wife. Yeah. And, like, you know, also he witnessed me almost kill Rappaport.
Yeah. At this point in the story, Officer Randone, he's like starting to turn on Harvey Keitel a little bit. So it seemed like, you know, well,
convenient,
like,
oh, I'll just kind of, like, act like I can't get this door open here. So, like, we do get to see that, and I think that's really effective there, because, like, you can see, like, we know that Harvey Keitel, Ray, sucks in this movie. We've seen a lot and heard a lot of the things he's done, and even, like, founding this Copland and everything, but, like, I think showing him actively let a purported friend of his die is kind of like, oh man, this guy really fucking sucks. But you're right, a lot of it is just like, oh, he probably talked to the mayor off screen and got him to drop the case. Oh, he set up this town because of, like, mob connections and stuff. Like, even the mob connection stuff, it's that guy from The Sopranos, and we just see in pictures.
See pictures, yeah. And, like, I think it definitely adds to the, like, the slow pace and the noir feel of the movie. It would have been a very different movie if it featured all that stuff. And, you know, I totally also get the argument that it would just be so convenient if, like, Sly Stallone were to walk in on Harvey Keitel doing a deal with that dude from The Sopranos or whatever. But it just felt like a step too removed, and it was, you know, because of that, you as an audience member have to do a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of making the connections and stuff, so you don't lose track of what's going on. Mm-hmm. Not that it's an incredibly complex plot. It really isn't, but it's just one of those that you do have to pay attention to. And, you know, at the end of the day, I thought the movie stands as a really good and interesting, like, character study about, you know, mm-hmm. Officer Freddie, whatever his name is, Sly Stallone's character. But, like, as a, like, a, you know, it wasn't my favorite movie. Sure. I enjoyed it, and I appreciate, obviously, the acting is incredible, and I thought Sly Stallone's character was wonderful. But it didn't grab me so much, you know?
Yeah, it is a slow burn, and it's interesting because it's, like, all the stuff happening off screen, everything. I feel like there could be a longer, like, here's this director's cut, ultimate edition of this movie. But at the same time, even at, like, an hour 40-something, it is kind of slow moving. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, yeah, I guess we could get more context and everything, but it's like it already feels kind of slow at times now. So, like, I don't know if there's any winning without changing the script up quite a bit. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting the aspects that they did decide to devote time to. Like, there was a really long sequence that shows when Sly was saving the girl from the car that was underwater. You know, that probably lasted at least 5 to 10 minutes. And, you know, that's something that could have easily just been alluded to or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's considering how huge the cast was, I would expect it to be on more of a grand scale. But at the end of the day, this is like a small little portrait of a town. You know what I mean? It's not this huge sweeping NYPD story. It's a small little story about a man and being a sheriff of a town, you know?
Yeah, and I think we get to see a lot of, like, you know, Stallone and Harvey Keitel and Rappaport here, but, like, stuff like Leota, he's in a lot of this movie, but ultimately his character just kind of serves to be the kind of friend of Stallone who kind of shows up at the end and helps him out, but, like, I feel like there's a distraction of, like, the fire thing and things like that. Like, I just don't think that the Leota stuff pays off that much, you know, for him just kind of showing up at the end and helping him with the gunfight at the end.
Yeah.
It's like, well, okay, sure. But, like, I didn't feel like I cared enough or knew that character enough to have that, like, oh, man, he's helping out. You know, he's one for the good guys here. You know, it wasn't that big, you know?
Well, that last sequence where Sly, like, he has a gun fired in his ear. So at this point in the movie, he's, like, almost completely deaf. And he starts, you know, he goes to Harvey Keitel's house and, like, one by one picks off all the guys.
Him just walking up with a shotgun broad daylight, hobbling up the street. I love that.
It was cool. I thought that the movie was going to have, like, a Taxi Driver-esque turn where, like, it suddenly just becomes this massacre movie. Like, Sly Stallone reaches his breaking point and he's just a broken man and now he's going to take everyone down with him. And, like, you know, that would have been silly, but it also would have been amazing.
Well, it reminds me of the end of Thief. You know, we covered on this where James Caan is just kind of like, he's going to go in his house and kill all these motherfuckers, you know, like, always a sucker for that. Or, like, even old Western, you know, Unforgiven and stuff, like, just ones where at the end, it's just like, all right, I'm just going to come fuck some dudes up, you know?
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, it's very satisfying, especially when they're all bad guys, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
The Ray Liotta's character, it was a big question mark for me as well. Like, he was kind of a foil for the other guys, but because, you know, him kind of leaving Harvey Keitel's inner circle was the signal that, like, okay, things are starting to change maybe. But, you know, the scene with his girlfriend, like, being completely covered in burns, it was just, it was really disturbing to see.
It's weird. She's, like, smiling and saying, I came home to see you. And
it's,
like,
so weird when a person, like, no longer looks human and that they're doing human things.
Talking and, like, they're cognizant
and their
and
eyes
stuff.
Are moving around. It's very unnerving.
It was fucked up looking, sure.
Really, really disturbing. And, yeah, the fact that he was the cause of that because he wanted insurance money is just ludicrous. Like, at least give your girlfriend a heads up. Like, hey, babe, don't be in the basement at this time.
Yeah, because he's like, oh, she said she was going out to hang out with friends. And it's like, well, look, maybe you super make sure. She's like, he's like, hey, it was on a timer. It's okay, well, I think you got to really cross your T's and dot your I's if you're doing that, you know?
Also, $200,000 for a house in New York on the Jersey,
like,
Shore.
Across the river from fucking New York. Yeah, Jesus Christ. Yeah, so I'm kind of with you. I like this movie a lot, and especially as a big Stallone fan, I thought this was a cool piece of his filmography to see, you know, because you know, a lot of people just lump him in with other, like, oh, he's like a Van Damme or a Seagal or a, you know, Schwarzenegger, I feel like, is on that top tier. But I feel like Stallone was always his own thing, where it's like he could just do that dumbass action movie. And he obviously loves movies and loves doing different types of projects, you know?
Yeah, I feel like he is a big action star, or at least he was. But most of his roles were a lot more like self-reflective, and, mm-hmm. and more of a character there than, for example, like Commando, like yeah, Arnold exactly. Schwarzenegger in Commando or whatever. It's more just like brutal violence, whereas his characters are more fleshed out and deep. And I think that's you know, to his credit, I feel like that's something he brings to the table.
100%. Especially even like Rocky and Rambo, you know, like as cheesy as those movies got, and Rambo kind of became that parody of itself, action movie, and Rocky got ridiculous and stuff like that. Those, especially those first movies in each of those, John Rambo, you know, like it's a character study of a yeah. Vietnam vet. Mm-hmm. Rocky is just this guy that got plucked and got to, you know, go after this crazy dream. Like it's, he gets really into his characters and he's very, very good at it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think it does him enough justice to just be like, oh yeah, he's this meathead action guy. Like,
yeah, he's definitely
he's
not.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. He's great. He's one of my all time favorites for sure.
Huge talent.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So I'm with you. I enjoyed this. Glad we watched it.
Do you think that it was worth it for Stallone to gain all that weight for this movie?
I mean, for him, I can't speak for him, but like he got to do something different and he got a lot of like critical acclaim for it. And also he just seems like one of those fucking dudes that's just like, this is what he does. He's, you know, he, you know, like a Christian Bale type thing or something. Someone that's always like super fit and is like, eh, I'll just do something crazy for this one and then I'll get right back to it.
Yeah. I read that he would just eat like a constant diet of pancakes in the lead up.
Poor Sly. Poor Sly.
Yeah, it's it always fascinates me, the extreme weight stuff that actors will do for certain roles. Christian Bale, I feel like, is a great example. Mm-hmm. He's been on every side of the spectrum.
The Machinist and Batman, like
He's been hugely muscular. He's been unbelievably skinny, hugely fat in Vice, right? And
Was that all he put on all that?
Yeah, yeah. And wow. I think American Hustle as well. He was in, and he might have been fat in that movie. Really extraordinary. And I feel like it does add a dimension to the character. Like it would be, if Stallone's body was, you know, as ripped as it usually is for this film, I feel like it wouldn't have made sense for the character. You know, why would this character be so preoccupied with his body?
Yeah. Well, and then you also have, you know, your true actors that, you know, will take 45 minutes to walk to the bathroom to pee because you're a werewolf doctor. Fuck.
You want to talk about Morbius?
No, I don't even know what that is. I just know it's another dumbass movie that dumbass Jared Leto made, and he was a dumbass on the set. Fuck that dude. Always fuck that dude.
He was great in Blade Runner 24.
I have never said he's not a good actor. I have always said he seems like a grade A asshole.
Yeah, he seems like a huge asshole. And apparently it came out recently, or maybe it's been out there for a while now, but he just like has this harem of like 16-year-old models that he just texts and invites to his hotel room,
Shocking.
Like, this dude could have any woman that he wants. Why, just fucking wait till they're 18? I don't know. Like, just
look at anything about this guy's entire life and history and way he carries himself, and you could just, he's been screaming massive asshole to me ever since I first saw him in movies. Like, fuck him forever.
Egomaniac, but an incredible actor. I mean, Dallas Buyers Club, Requiem for a Dream.
Sure.
A lot of really great movies.
I like it when he just got his face punched in a bunch in Fight Club. That's maybe my favorite role is. Jesus Christ. It's a fucking shitty ass band.
You know, you're not someone who has like strong like hatred feelings toward anyone or anything, except for Jared Leto. I'm at a loss as to think of what is a comparable figure for you. Is there anyone that inspires as much rage?
And you can, this is not a new thing. You could ask Matt Helgeson. I mean, 2009, 2010, Matt Helgeson was always so amused at how much I hated Jared Leto. So anytime he was doing some dumbass thing, Helgeson, and he still does this from time to time. He'll send me like a picture of like, look how he dressed at this stupid thing. And I'm like, oh, motherfucker. So it's been a long, long hatred I've had for that motherfucker. Yeah. Lots of documented history of me saying, fuck that dude. So I'll say it again. Fuck that dude.
Fuck that dude. Great actor, though.
Sure.
Yeah. He's a good actor.
Yeah. All right.
All right. As always, you can find us on patreon.com/panningthestream or on Twitter at panthestream. Give us a follow and a like and a patron. Become a patron. Patron. Become a patron.
5 stars on Spotify is always good.
Yeah. And just grab that old megaphone and stick it out the window and scream, Panning the Stream.
Yeah.
And everyone on the block will be sure to love it, and they'll be sure to download, subscribe, etc.
Yeah, strap one of those big cartoon horns to your car and just drive through your neighborhood playing the latest episode and spoiling whatever movie we're talking about.
Yeah, put on one of those bumper stickers on your car too that have the little stick figures of the family.
Of course,
but
yeah.
Instead of your family, it would just be a stick figure of Dan and me
watching a movie.
And it would just say Panning the Stream instead of the Smiths.
Yeah, become a patron.
Become a patron.
Yeah.
And for only $5, we just have one tier, people. And you get the episode a day early.
Wow.
You get the episode. You get access to our Discord records market.
Wow.
You get ad-free RSS feed.
Wow.
And you get for you a special Bonku written for you by Bonk. Bonk, do we have one this week? Yes, we do. This week, we are honoring our friend, Sean.
Sean?
Sean.
Sean? Are you trying to say Sean?
But it's Sean with an A-W.
A-W?
S-H-A-W-N.
Yeah, that's just Sean, too.
Sean, no, you can say
Sean. I work with a Sean, and it's just Sean.
Sean, too.
Sure.
Sean, too.
Yeah.
This Bonku is for you. Carved into Sean's flesh was the infernal symbol that gave him power.
Ooh, what do you think it looks like?
It looks like a gold play button atop a bunch of rocks and some water with a sheet of old-timey font that says, Panning the Stream.
Bonk, are you just looking at the logo on our wall?
Yeah.
On the pizone here?
No.
Okay, I like the logo. Alex Greenlee did a great job with it.
Yeah, it's Alex Greenlee. Oh, anyway, so I guess that's it. Do I say goodbye now?
Bye now.
Bye. Bye.